Blog Talk Radio.
This is for you, Kings fans, wherever you may be. All the frustration and disappointment of the past is gone.
Good evening, everyone. It is just past 11 o'clock on, is it Wednesday? I've already lost track of what day it is, which is not a good start to the season. But obviously, quite a bit happened in Game 1, and most of it wasn't very good, at least from a Kings fan perspective. But for some reason, we're going to talk to somebody who thought it was a great day. So I'm going to go ahead and unmute him now. Jake,
wow,
you there?
Hi. Yeah, I'm here. Hi, what's up? How are
great.
You?
Great.
That's good. Not great.
I believe
assume.
The
yeah.
yes. The one word answer is but you know, that's the kind of response you've got to expect after the last couple hours. But it's game one, so why should I be worried, right?
Is that rhetorical? I mean, I could answer if you want, but I don't want to.
I'm begging for answers, Jake. I'm begging for answers.
Well, your starting goalie's dead after throwing a temper tantrum at center ice. That was pretty embarrassing. The team
pretty bad. That went over really well when Fear the Finn posted that mid-game.
Wow, man, people loved that. Oof, man, I have a lot of really big fans in Kingsland, which I love.
Yeah.
You know what? I love my fans. I love all of you. Everyone in my mentions tonight. So I'm making new friends. That's really what this is all about.
I found a tweet from a year and a half ago saying, from my personal account, saying, Kings fans, haven't you learned by now not to respond to anything Fear the Finn says after a Kings loss? But it didn't really apply because this was
no.
In the middle of a Kings loss.
Well, that's true. Game was still tied at this point, so.
Yes.
They really should
to
not
the,
respond
to
anything
out
any
there.
Of us say ever. Just don't talk to us, man. It's not good for you. I worry about their
yeah.
health.
Yeah, remind me to quote this tomorrow. But yes, Kings fans, thank you for giving Jake a piece of your mind, but it's not going to change anything, unfortunately.
it's just not, no, after all these years. No, I'm sorry. I feel bad for them. But although, I mean, maybe it's good. Maybe it's therapeutic to get that frustration out. Better against me than, you know, I would hate it if they went to, like, a player's Twitter account or their girlfriend's Twitter account. So
yeah,
if they need to get
do you
it
think
out,
the next...
off their chest, right. I mean, right, exactly. I'd rather them get it off, you know. I mean, I can take it. That's fine.
Right, and the next 57 minutes are going to be me taking out my frustration in your direction. So I hope you're
ready. Okay, I'm ready. Hold on. Let me get my notebook. Are you on the couch in a comfortable position? Okay. I've seen several shows where they see therapists in them, so I'm pretty sure I know how this works.
It's, you know what, it's the beginning of October. I'm going to just go ahead and assume that I'm going to be all right. But let's go ahead and start with something that we both will enjoy talking about, which is Devin Setoguchi. Was supposed to be the story of tonight, and in the middle of everything that was or was not happening today, Setoguchi looked all right.
Yeah, he looked... I mean, you know, like an NHL player again, and that was such a good story, man. It was so good to see him back out there and playing and looking good. That's just, man, you know, I mean, you know, whatever. In the whole scheme of like a hockey game, you know, whatever, just seeing him back out there to me was like, that's really the feel-good story of the night or whatever. It would have been really cool to see to see him score, obviously. But, yeah, I really hope that he's able to, you know, to keep doing this consistently, because it would just, yeah, it would just be great to see, you know, a guy that's really been through a lot of stuff to be able to kind of find his way back in the NHL again. That would be great.
Right. And short of scoring four goals a la Austin Matthews or Joe Thornton someday, I thought that this is pretty much the most we could have expected out of Setoguchi, which was to hang it on with Kopitar and put up good possession numbers and get a few scoring chances. You know, there's still sort of, I think, going to be a transition. There was one play where he was skating down the right wing on what was looking like a 3-on-2, and he just sort of shot it high into the goalie. And I'm sure Andre probably got in his ear after that one a little bit and said, hey, listen, that's not the way we do things. But all in all, it was a good start. And considering that he's probably got two games to really show that he belongs in the lineup before Tanner Pearson comes back, it's not a bad start.
Yeah, I really see him in that role on that line. It's similar anyway to the kind of role the Sharks at the beginning wanted Tomas Hertl to play with, you know, with the Joes. Kind of a chase down pucks, you know, be kind of the aggressive guy that's going to go and cause problems and, you know, make some chaos. Because, you know, you do something like that with a guy who reads the game as well as Kopitar obviously does, you know, it's not going to phase him. So if Seto can cause some kind of some chaos, some, you know, mixed stuff up or whatever, that's something that Kopitar can take advantage of. And I think that he did a pretty good job of that. I mean, you know, the guys have only played together, what, you know, this is maybe their seventh game, and that's really optimistic. And I know it wasn't that many. It was much fewer than that because Kopitar obviously was at the World Cup of Hockey. So, you know, we'll give it a few games. But I would call tonight for Seto and for that line in general kind of a qualified success. And, you know, we'll see where it goes from there.
Right, and coming out of the preseason, obviously, I assume you probably weren't watching most of the Kings preseason because it's the preseason, and who cares? But from our perspective, he was, you know, I went to one game against Anaheim, and he looked, other than, you know, blasting a slap shot past whoever Anaheim's backup goalie is now, or third string, I think it was Dustin Tokarski, which isn't really a great barometer, but.
I didn't know Tokarski was there. Oh, my God. What a time to be alive.
Anymore. They sent him down, but he was briefly.
All right.
I mean, overall, he kind of looked like he belonged. I mean, he wasn't really fast, but who is on the Kings these days? So aside from that, he was doing pretty much what he needed to do to at least say, hey, maybe I deserve a shot. And sometimes things fall your way and Pearson gets suspended and Gabrick gets hurt. But that's not to say that Setoguchi doesn't deserve this, especially after his long road back.
Right, and I think another thing too is that he's a given the money that they're paying him, whatever. Even if he's a guy that doesn't play, you know, because he's not going to play all 80. Well, probably not going to play all 82 games this season. Knock on wood, as far as injury and stuff goes. Right. You know, I mean, he's a guy that they can put in the press box, and that's a guy that I think that's kind of almost a positive thing for the Kings, because that's a guy that's good enough that he's actually going to be competition to get into the lineup every night. I mean, good Lord. I mean, the Sharks scratched Michael Haley tonight. You know what I would do to have a guy like Setoguchi trying to chase guys to play better as opposed to Michael Haley? That's, you know, so I think if you look at it from that perspective, it's like, oh yeah, this is a good thing. You know, it's a good thing for him. He's on a team. He's getting regular practice time. And when he's playing, listen, if you get a chance to play with Andre Kopitar, even if it's for a few games, that's just going to make you a better hockey player. I mean, it just has to, I would think. Anyway.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that's all good news. I mean, really, for both these teams, I think the top six is not really the problem. It's where you get beyond that things get a little, we'll say interesting or whatever. It's only game one. We can say interesting for now. It's not concerning yet. It's interesting for now.
Yeah, and the, you know, there's going to be obviously a little bit of concern. Obviously, I sound like a hockey player just throwing obviously in every sentence, but apparently there is going to be a little bit of concern because it was a bit of a rough night for Carter and Toffoli with Teddy Purcell for the first time in the regular season, that is. And that might be a combination that lasts one more game because Pearson's coming back. But if Pearson is expected to slot on the first line, which kind of makes sense, it's going to be imperative that Purcell figures out how to play with Carter and Toffoli. And that's another situation where I think you can succeed as long as you work hard and go to the right areas with those two.
Yeah, I think the other thing, too, is that I've been, since the game has ended, I've kind of been looking at some of the, you know, matchup stats, whatever. I'm looking at it right now. You know, I mean, they played the vast majority of the time against Vlasic and Braun and Hurdle, Pavelski, and Thornton, which, you know, I know that this is a line that they want to be able to compete with those guys, but they really, it was really not that bad. I mean, the Sharks edged possession in those, but I would not say, like, it would be totally unfair for me to say they dominated in possession in those areas. So give it a few games.
Yeah.
We'll see what comes from it there, because I think I think there's something that I really like Teddy Purcell a lot, and I thought that was a really good pickup. So I don't know. I guess maybe this is a confirmation bias thing where I really want him to be good. But I think we'll see. We'll see. I would give it a few games, maybe against, you know, when they're playing against players that aren't quite of that, you know, whatever, that level, that caliber.
Right. It's a tough assignment going up against the Sharks in their own building for your first game. And I think that overall, you know, the Kings scored one goal. They had 22 shots, which for them is not much. But it's a little early to get too concerned over all that, at least with a number of younger forwards sort of waiting in the wings. It's certainly not the end of the world. Nick Dowd is probably going to rotate in next game, and he had a very, very good preseason for the Kings. So there's enough mixing and matching, and NBC was talking about how the Kings lack depth, and they lack top-end depth, but they've got plenty of guys that can rotate in. So
Is there such a thing, really? I know this is the thing that hockey media talks about, but does anyone really have top-end depth in the salary cap NHL? They don't. Because guess what? If Andrei Kopitar gets hurt or Joe Pavelski gets hurt, the teams are going to lose a lot of games because you can't replace them, which is why they're Andrei Kopitar and Joe Pavelski. Wow, welcome to how the NHL works. This is wild. I can't believe we're breaking this down for the first time ever. I mean, to me, the bigger concern is that guys like, I mean, For me looking at the Kings as a guy who has not, you know, obviously really followed them during the preseason, is Matt Green is playing for the LA Kings, and I don't know how that's possible or why that's a thing. He looked awful.
Yeah.
Terrible. He's bad. He's not good.
Right.
But he wasn't all that good, I don't think, before he was playing for the Kings. So I don't get it. What's the deal? Why is he there? Maybe that's really where the depth hurts for the Kings, is on defense more than the forward slots.
Right. And this is what you're going to hear about if the Kings do lose their first three games like they did last year, is why is Matt Green in the lineup and why is Jordan Nolan in the lineup when Nick Dowd is in the press box and Kevin Gravel is in the minors? And I know that these are guys that you might not even have heard of, but we're talking about the 24, 25-year-old prospects that have been biding their time and were pretty impressive in the AHL last year and now are still seeing their path impeded by players that either are losing effectiveness or never had a ton of effectiveness to begin with. And the Clifford Andreoff Nolan line was a thing for a lot of last year. Andreoff was above expectations. Nolan was probably below expectations last season, but neither of them offers, again, that scoring touch that you would hope to see from some of the AHL guys. But for the first game, I can see why they went with their experience lineup. It's just going forward. And the bigger issue for the Kings is that they went out and signed Tom Gilbert to be their fifth defenseman, and now he's sitting behind Matt Green.
Right. I just think it's – and the Sharks do this. I mean, well, in fairness, every NHL team does this.
Yeah,
because they're all the same. I mean, really they are. I mean, I know we talk about Lynette, and I agree. I think Daryl Sutter is a really good coach, but all of them have this kind of similar weird blind spotty thing where they'll play, you know, veteran guys, experience, and I don't really have a problem with it in general. It's just that it feels like there's not a willingness in the NHL in general, and this is a problem with the league, in my opinion, is that there's just not a willingness to experiment, to take chances, to try to do something. You know, it just seems like it's just such a conservative league, and I think that really, really hurts it. And, you know, you see guys scoff about, you know, oh, the KHL is just, there's no defense. It's like, well, okay, right. But I bet you when fans go and see a KHL game, it's actually fun. You know, all of them, because they're scoring and offense. And that's maybe that's not such a terrible thing. So I don't know. I just feel like I would really, and this is a thing that, it, not with the same players, but, you know, we talk about with the Sharks as well. Like, you know, Michael Haley's on the team, right? Okay, he's bad. He's not good. That's not a controversial opinion. There are a lot of Sharks rookies, or not rookies because they're not with the team, that had really good training camps that aren't with the team. And it's like, well, you know, we know what Michael Haley is. We know what Tommy Wingles is. We know what they are. We already know. So why don't we give a chance to some of these guys? You know, whatever. If they're going to play in the AHL anyway, play them a few games.
Yeah.
Play them against the Kings. You know, that's where you're going to learn. You don't learn anything by beating the Oilers 6-0. You don't. You learn something by losing to the Kings 4-3 in a really good game. That's where you learn things, in my opinion, anyway. And I feel like I feel like Peter DeBoer is similar to Daryl Sutter in that way, and that they're just like so damn conservative that it can be really, it can be frustrating at times. And so I guess I'm saying I empathize with your plight.
Right, and there are two little bits of hypocrisy for me complaining about this as a Kings fan. One is that defensive style has worked so well for them over the last 5 or 6 years, and secondly that the way the LA lineup set up coming into the season, they had to make decisions based on waiver eligibility in a lot of cases, or at least they chose to make decisions on waiver eligibility in a lot of cases, and that's where, you know, sending down young defensemen and leaving Matt Green up with the club. That's part of where that comes in. But the Matt Green one is just so interesting because they did waive him a few months ago. And it's, you know, apparently his recovery has gone well enough that the Kings feel comfortable using him. But he was on a pairing today with Derek Forbort, who is one of the aforementioned 24-year-old prospects sort of getting his last shot to break in. And he, you know, his possession numbers weren't very good, and obviously he was playing with Matt Green, but he made a couple nice defensive plays. He broke up a 2-on-1. He looked more confident than he did at any point last year. So it's, you know, it's October 12th, and the Kings are definitely going to rotate some of these younger, less proven players into the lineup. So maybe
that's what I want to ask you about, actually. What do you think about that? It seems kind of interesting to me that the NHL default is to take some of these young players and be like, oh man, hey, whoa, Derek Forbort, you're a guy that, you know, could really use some confidence and, you know, learn some things. Hey, why don't we put you with a guy that belongs in the ECHL? What do you think about that? Go out there, go prove something. All right, Godspeed, kiddo. And like, that to me is a very weird hockey thing. And it's like, why are we doing that? It, like, to me, it makes perfect sense. You know, obviously Timo Meier is a guy that's the next guy for the Sharks. He got mono during preseason. I've already made all the jokes. You can't make any new ones. I've already done it all.
Great.
You know, that's the guy that I thought, like, okay, should play with Joe Thornton and Joe Pavelski. Not because, oh, yeah, whoa, Timo Meier's going to be a first-line center after playing in the Q. No, obviously he's not, or a winger, I should say. He's not, but you're not going to learn anything. There's no one else on the team you can learn more from than playing with those guys. So even if that's not your future long term, you know, it's like a hockey apprenticeship. That to me makes way more sense. To be like, oh man, hey, go play on the fourth line with Tommy Wingles and Matt Nieto, and hey, Godspeed. All right, let's see how that goes. I just don't really get that from a development standpoint. I've never really heard it explained to me by a hockey person. That's like, oh yeah, oh right, okay. Well, no, I get that. It's like, oh, prove yourself with the worst player on the team. Like, why? Why are we doing that to guys we should be valuing so highly? I've never understood that.
Yeah, and it's a weird balance to strike with the defense, especially because I was so thrilled just to see that the Kings had a clearly defined top four and stuck with it after giving Rob Scuderi like 21 minutes a night for large stretches. So it's a little easier to do that from a forward core. And now that I'm curious, I'm looking up who Derek Forbort played with the most last year, and it was actually Drew Doughty. They gave him a chance at least last year. in that respect to play with a really good partner. And it's the Kings actually took a decent approach, I thought, last year. They, aside from, you know, the number of minutes they gave Scuderi, they took Forbert and they took Gravel, Kevin Gravel, and they took Nick Dowd, all guys who hadn't played in the NHL yet, and gave them 5 to 10 games, and they all got a look and a chance to sort of acclimate themselves without really putting them in a ton of pressure. And with the forwards, it's a little different because it's not necessarily pressure putting them with someone like Andre Kopitar or Joe Thornton or whatever, but it is a situation where there's maybe a little bit more thought that they should be succeeding or scoring right away. So it's not a perfect, there's no perfect answer to it, but I agree. There's a certain level of conservativeness, and not helped by being on a team that's had that kind of success and you're sort of afraid to mess with it.
Right. Are you surprised at all that Nick Dowd wasn't playing tonight? I mean, that's a guy, I've seen him, you know, in Ontario. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of video because, you know, obviously I live 15 minutes away, and that's a guy, yeah. I think is like, you know, that's a guy. That's a guy, if I'm a Kings fan, I'm pretty excited about what he brings to the table. Are you surprised that he didn't play tonight?
No, not for game one. I want him in the lineup ahead of Andy Andreoff. And it was looking like Nick Schorr was actually going to be out of the lineup today. He was coming back from an injury, which required him to go through some sort of protocol. So I guess take a couple stabs at it. But Nick Schorr did, of course, return to the lineup. So I would expect to see Dowd in on Friday against Philadelphia. It's a home game. It's a chance to change things up a little bit. And, you know, if you want to put Andrew off in the wing and sit Nolan instead, I think that makes a lot of sense for the Kings. But it is the big question that I was seeing around the site and on Twitter and everything was, what's the point of having the preseason if maybe the standout player of the preseason for the Kings is not, it wasn't good enough to get him a spot in the lineup.
Yeah, I think I know, right. And I mean, I do get that as a, you know, like as a fan concern, but at the same time, we talk so much about, especially, you know, you and I as, you know, fans of teams that at least appear to take the analytical side of the game seriously. It's six games, man, you know? Okay. Yeah. So great. Nick Dowd had six great games playing against a bunch of non-NHL players. Which isn't to take anything away from him per se, but it's like, okay, but maybe there's more to it than just that. And so at least,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
Give him a break, man. You know, like I'm willing in this situation, especially, to be like, hey, listen, these guys are NHL coaches, and not that, you know, that means they're necessarily automatically right, but they can see things mm-hmm. against lesser competition that, you know, well, first of all, we can't see if the game's not on TV anyway, which most of them are not in California.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, who knows? Yeah. He scored a lot of points, but, you know, take into account the competition, whatever. And maybe there's more to it than just that. So as long as he gets a shot at, you know, in soon, yeah, like you said, if he plays Friday, then, you know, whatever, then it's not that big a deal, and I get it.
Yeah, and so as a quick aside, I was struck by how similar the Sharks lineup looked to the one that we faced in the playoffs last season, aside, of course, from Schlemko and Bodker jumping into the lineup. Was there anyone that you were surprised wasn't in the lineup for the Sharks today?
I was very pleasantly surprised to see that Michael Haley didn't draw into the lineup. That was, and maybe this is just because I'm, you know, too damn cynical, but I was just positive that he was going to play in this game, you know, against the Kings opening night, you know, make a statement and, you know, that, all that, you know, crap that I don't care about, obviously. And then he didn't play, and it was like, oh, okay, all right. I'm not surprised because I think, and not to go too deep into it because, you know, nobody on the Kings side cares about the Sharks, but the fact that Timo mm-hmm. Meier is out really has kind of screwed up the whole everything, really. You know, Timo Meier never got his audition with the Joes, which means that Tomas Hertl didn't get an extended look at third line center. So as a result, Hertl still top line. Now Tierney's on that third line center, which means Wingles is the fourth line center. And if there's a thing to be concerned about, if you're a Kings fan, it's the fact that the Kings did not absolutely feast on the fact that A, Peter DeBoer does not line match because either he thinks that it makes him a better coach or because he's an idiot. And the Sharks started Chris Tierney as the third line center and literally Tommy Wingles, the Connor Gillespie of the NHL at fourth line center. And the Kings were not able to take advantage of it. That to me is like, okay. I mean, listen, I'm happy the Sharks got away with it, but I really don't think that either of those guys have what it takes right now, or Tierney right now, Wingles ever, to do that job. For me, Wingles is the guy that, you know, headed to the press box once Meyer cracks the roster, which will be, in my opinion, within, you know, before Christmas.
And there was one point where Tierney was holding off three guys in the offensive zone where I was wondering the exact same thing. How are the Kings not taking advantage of this even a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that I think Chris Tierney's a fine player, and I hate this kind of this thing we have as, you know, especially, you know, writing about hockey a lot. I don't want to make it sound like, you know, I think Chris Tierney sucks or something. He doesn't. He's fine. But he's a young player, and it's not good enough right now to be a third-line center in the National Hockey League. It's just not. And, yeah, I mean, there were times tonight where I saw Tommy Wingles out there against Andre Kopitar, and I was like, holy God. You know, how is this not going extremely poorly? And, you know, but small sample size, part of it's good luck, whatever it is, but it's just like, you know, Jesus God. It's like you're not even going to line match enough to keep Kopitar away from your fourth-line center. It's Andre Kopitar. Like, listen, I get it. He's underrated in the NHL, but you play him six times a year. You should know what he does. Like, come on. What do you – he beat you in the Stanley Cup final. Like, let's go, man. Like, show some respect. But I often feel like I'm the only person outside of Los Angeles that actually loves Andre Kopitar. So I don't know what the deal is. People are idiots. They don't know what they're missing. My beautiful Slovenian raccoon son.
You cannot claim him like that, Jake. You just can't.
I know. I actually just
maybe a nephew
says that all the time. All right, that's fine. That's fair enough.
Fair. No, yeah, it's okay. The editors of your site have a long history of loving Andrzej Kopitar more than anyone, except maybe the editors of our site.
Yeah, well, that's the kind of bond that we have together. It's a mutual bond of respect over the admiration of Andrzej Kopitar and his immense eye bags.
So let's talk about somebody who.
Sleep.
Let's talk about somebody who that level of mutual respect doesn't necessarily exist for. Jonathan Quick.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
He now is getting an MRI tomorrow, is the early word. He has, I put one of the tags for this podcast as groin injuries because that's what everybody's sort of assuming at this point. And it's not a good situation.
That's not good. I already thought the Kings were kind of in a tough spot this year because they're a little bit thinner than usual and just, you know, the cap crunch and blah, blah, blah. And, yeah, losing Quick is – I mean, you know, we've talked about it a bunch. It's not – to me, the Kings do not ride or die by Jonathan Quick. I think Jonathan Quick in the regular season has been kind of – I hate this word – kind of overrated, whatever. He's good. But I don't think that that's like losing Quick is not necessarily going to sink, you know, like last year's Kings team. Not in the regular season anyway, but that's going to be tough.
Yeah, and the Kings have survived without Quick before. I think they rode Scrivens and Jones when Jones was making his NHL debut for about a month, and they, I mean, of course they did all right. But Scrivens and Jones kind of have a little bit of an edge over Zatkoff, and I'm assuming Peter Budaj, who will probably get called up and serve as backup for the next blank weeks while Quick is out. So it's not the end of the world, but the thing that, you know, I've fallen into a weird trap of seeing so much backfire on Quick's reputation that I almost feel like I'm defending him at times, which is interesting. But the fact is he's been an above average goalie, however slightly, for the last 3 years while playing the most of any goalie. So if even if you're going to replace the save percentage for a few games, you're still talking about someone who's able to handle 80%+ of the Kings starts without really collapsing. And that's just not something that you can plug in a guy for.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that to me is the biggest concern, is that Quick is such a work. It's like Doughty, actually, where I feel like Doughty is Doughty is like Quick in that I feel like, oh, he's kind of overrated by certain parts of the world, but by other parts he's underrated because he plays so many minutes. And it's like that still counts for something. You know, the fact that he's playing and him playing at like this quote unquote reduced level is still better than if they had to play X play replacement level player, you know, in those minutes. So right. Yeah, that to me is the biggest concern. That being said, I mean, you look at the rest of the Pacific Division, and it is just – it's like Mad Max out here, man. Anaheim is doing its best to kill itself. Vancouver is an AHL team. Edmonton is not good, maybe a little better than before. Calgary is still not a playoff team. You know,
well,
the
Kings
have
just
won the Stanley Cup as an 8 seed, if you recall. Whatever. Just make the playoffs. If Quick is healthy by the time the playoffs roll around, it's not that big a deal. And maybe, you know, well, as long as the injury isn't really serious, maybe, you know, there are worse things than being like, oh man, hey, we can force Daryl Sutter to not be able to play Jonathan Quick 70 games this year. Maybe there's a good part of that.
The
I'm
question.
I'm doing my best here, man.
No, it's very nice of you as our guest to do this. The real question comes down to whether the Kings are going to actively try and find a replacement. And I don't think they are, unless it's a, you know, heaven forbid, a season injury or a, you know, he's out until the All-Star break or he's out until April.
Right. They don't. I think Dubai and Budai, Jesus Christ, and Zach Kopf, I'm an idiot, will be fine. If it's like, if we're talking like a month, you know, whatever. They're fine.
Yeah.
Zach Kopf, I think, is a pretty serviceable and underrated backup. And Budai was so good with the rain last year that I kind of almost want him to get a shot because I feel like he's kind of earned it. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily great numbers and sense and whatever opinion, but I feel like that's a guy that, you know, hey, give him a shot and then we'll see what happens.
Right. And I don't think the Kings are going to panic because they've, ever since, you know, trading Colin Miller and Martin Jones away, the Kings have sort of managed to make moves that allow them to contend without really throwing away really important pieces of their future. Like even when last year they traded their second round pick from, I think it was 2013, Valentin Zhukov, and he was traded for Christopher Stieg. And yes, that was a win now move, but he was also a prospect that was sort of falling out of favor in the organization. So the Kings have sort of reached the point where they realize maybe if the window is not necessarily closing, it's at least at the point where they can't just be giving away all their key prospects before they get to the NHL. So I don't think the Kings are going to make a panic move. They might try to find a goalie on the cheap, but someone, I think it was Sheng actually, was taking a look at the list of available free agent goaltenders right now, and it is a dark universe.
It's not good. I looked at that and I've seen horror movies scare me that much. Yeah, I would not do that if I'm the Kings. It's just ride or die, baby. We'll make it work with Zach Kopf or not work. And yeah, this is kind of weird,
Zach Kopf,
because the Kings are so than any of the guys on the market. It's just the Kings to me are like a model organization for goalie development. So this is the first time in what, 5 years where you could say, oh my God, the Kings might have a goalie shortage. I mean, maybe you can speak to this. Is there somebody down the pipeline, maybe not ready right now, but that you can say is like, oh, maybe this is the next Kings backup that they'll be able to sell for some nice draft picks in the future? Is there a guy like that?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because the answer is, well, it's no. Kings sort of had to restock this year because their two prospects further down in the system One of them got arrested, which, you know.
Oh.
Don't insert a joke here, but yeah.
Jesus, come on.
Yes, thank you. So one got cut loose for that reason. I think he's back in the Czech Republic or something. And then the other one, Alec Dillon, was sort of a flyer that they took late in the draft, and he was having hip issues, and it didn't make sense to re-sign him. So they basically went out and they signed Zatkoff. They traded their seventh best defensive prospect. Sorry, Nick Ebert. Their seventh best defensive prospect for Jack Campbell, who is sort of the fallen star who was drafted in the first round 5 years ago and now was expected to be an AHL backup. But he's young, but he's not expected to be that type of guy that's going to move up and be a backup. And then they signed the Red Wings' old AHL goaltender on a PTO and might have to bring him back now. So the pipeline's pretty bare, and you might see them try to take a goalie high in this year's draft, but beyond Quick, it's slim pickings.
Right. I mean, the biggest thing with Quick is that he's been healthy and played a lot of games, which I know we already mentioned. So, right, that's you kind of count on that. But like I said, I don't think this is really a big problem for the Kings unless it's like a season ending type thing. I mean, then obviously, Okay, right. That would be a serious problem. But other than that, I mean, I think they'll be okay, especially again, given how mediocre I think this division is going to be this year again, just like last year. I mean, so meh. That wouldn't be the biggest thing. For me as a Kings fan, that's not my biggest concern. My biggest concern is that they just didn't really look that good, just, you know, on the ice in general. Which is kind of a first, because usually, I know the Sharks won this game last year and the year before that, but the difference this year, I know it's only a one-goal game, but the Sharks look to me, and this is my opinion, a lot better than the Kings in this game, which is not something I would have said in any of the previous years. In previous years, we were like, "Oh, yeah, maybe the Sharks win," but it at least feels closer than this game did. I thought the Sharks were definitely the better team tonight, which I don't really feel like I could say the vast majority of the time these matchups previously.
Right. My thought down the third period was this would be a good period for the Kings if they were up a goal, but they were down a goal, and the Sharks never really looked like they were too concerned. So I agree. I mean, people have, I think, already forgotten just how good the Kings were in the regular season last year, all things considered, and with their, possession numbers, despite not having, Gabrick and Brown really contributing at all, they still managed to put up a good season. So it's not the end of the world. My TV in the background is playing a Brett Favre commercial, where he's advertising this belt, I think, that helps back support, but they were, and this is going to get to a point that makes sense, I promise. But they were explaining the mechanics of this belt, and it was a bunch of strands of copper and metal all tied together that provide proper support. And I was thinking of the last time Jonathan Quick had this type of injury, someone was posting quotes from a doctor who was describing it as the groin muscles and tendons or whatever being a bunch of spaghetti noodles that are raw, just bunched together. And there are three different grades of this type of injury, and it's all in the number of spaghetti noodles that are snapped in this case, and that's the analogy. So the point is, if not too many of those spaghetti noodles are snapped, I think the Kings will be totally fine. But if it's a complete tear, then we're going to have to start rehashing some options.
What do you think, and I don't mean to make it too depressing on opening night of the season or whatever, but what do you think the Kings should do in that situation? If it's like, hey, Quick's gone for the year, what do you think the move is at that point that makes the most sense for the Kings' long-term future?
I think the Kings stay patient. I think they wait a month or two and see if Calgary becomes a seller, or, and, you know, is willing to trade Brian Elliott, or if Edmonton is willing to go up Cam Talbot, or whoever outside the division has a similar situation. I think right now it's too early to get any sort of a deal on a starter quality netminder. So if I'm the Kings, I wait and I see how Zatkoff holds up, give him a starter's workload and see how he performs.
Because right now the I don't think even without Quick that the Kings are a team that can actually tank without, you know, unloading just a ton of good players. And correct me if I'm wrong, this upcoming draft is really not anything to write home about, especially not in comparison to the last two, correct? Where it's that wouldn't really be worth it even if they could get there, right? There's just really not that top end talent. So the Kings are better off kind of just doing what they're doing, and if they end up in a lottery position and get, you know, a better draft pick than whatever, but if not, then, you know, making the playoffs is always better than not making the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think the King, like you said, if the Kings are in the East, maybe the move is different. The Kings are in a division where, you know, they're not going to be facing a whole lot of competition, so to speak, to get in the playoffs, unless Calgary or one of those teams punches way above their weight again. I'm looking at the Kings' schedule for at least the first month of the season, and it's, you know, it's not like they're going through a meat grinder. They do have the Central Division, it looks like, which is pretty tough, but, you know, you got Vancouver and Columbus and I guess Philly mixed in. So it's a test for the first month, but it's also one where the games are a little bit more spread out. They don't have any back-to-backs until the end of the month. So it's enough time where they can let things sit for a while, and then hopefully they make it to November where they get Calgary, Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa, Winnipeg, Colorado, Edmonton, New Jersey, and Anaheim all back-to-back.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's a nice break.
Wow, that smells like a win streak to me. Good Lord.
Maybe Montreal is a loss because the Kings never seem to get out of Montreal alive.
Fair.
And they have a goalie, too.
Do they? Is he back yet? Whatever.
Yeah, I don't know.
So at least there's that. That team sucks. The Ducks suck. I'm almost as excited about how bad I think the Ducks are going to be this year as I am about how decent I think the Sharks will be this year.
I just don't know if Carlisle being there is, and, you know,
now,
as much
don't
as...
discount Jarrett Bull's inclusion in the lineup. He is going to play. You know it as well as I do.
He was so fun to watch. He was so fun to watch when I watched him against the Kings.
Oh, yeah, you got to go to the preseason game. How was it in person? I mean, I watched the game, the last game against the Ducks was televised for the Sharks, and it was just breathtaking that anyone could be so bad at hockey.
Bull was on the ice for 20 total shot attempts. You know how many of them were for the Ducks?
Oh, wait. Two?
Zero.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. That's
maybe
that's
it was one, but it was, yeah, it was, it, I think the word was breathtaking. I think the Ducks still have too much talent to really be in trouble, even as they, you know, if there are some bad lineup decisions going into the season, I think they still have too much, to be too concerned. But yeah, the Kings can compete with them, even with Jonathan Quick out.
My thing would be if let's assume Sharks win the division, because I which is the first time in years that I feel like, oh yeah, Sharks are going to win the division. If the Kings play the Ducks in the first round, I mean, even if we feel like this is a Kings team that's maybe not as good as last year, the year before that, whatever. If you told me, okay, maybe Ducks have a slightly more talented lineup, and I don't know if I buy that necessarily. If things are equal and you tell me, hey, my team's coaching, Daryl Sutter's in charge, and he gets the coach against Randy Carlyle in a 7-game series, I feel pretty confident about my team's chances.
That's fair.
I just feel like
Daryl
Sutter can probably outcut coach Randy Carlyle. Bold statement here. Hold on. Yeah, hot take. Put on your flame retardant suit. Oof. But I feel pretty good about that. I think he could probably handle that.
Yeah.
So, any other takeaways from tonight? What else did we learn? Did we learn anything else? It's only one game. I feel like at this point, maybe there was a point in my life where I could overreact to the first game, but now it's like, oh yeah, man, no, the Sharks won. That's fine. And,
right.
We have to do it again in 2 days. So.
Yeah, we learned that Brett Burns and Logan Couture can score when they're in the slot with room, and we learned that the Sharks are still very good, and that the Kings
are always still great for my fantasy team, by the way. God bless.
Oh, yeah. I'm happy for you.
Thank you. I'm happy for me, too.
Yeah. He was an inevitable goal scorer tonight against Martin Jones, because that's just what happens. But I don't know.
Are you suggesting if we phrase it a certain way that Tyler Toffoli scores on Martin Jones frequently?
I think that's a direct quote. I'm going to leave it there.
Please quote me on that.
Mm-hmm. We'll see. but no, I don't have any other really strong takeaways. I think that the top four for the Kings is going to be fine, and the bottom pair is going to take some work. And I think that the third and fourth lines are going to have a lot of nights like tonight where they clamp down and they limit damage, but they don't really get a whole lot going on the other end. And that's, you know, what we were expecting, at least from our side. What did you think of the Thornton line today? Cause it was interesting watching them not totally rip apart the Kings, but only partially rip apart the Kings.
Yeah, I thought they looked okay. I mean, I thought they were good, maybe not good by their standards, but they were fine. Mm-hmm. I think to me, the future of that line is that they can match up pretty well with almost any top line in the NHL, which then opens up the opportunity for that second line with Couture to really rip apart guys. Because Couture really, honestly, maybe not on the Sharks or the Kings, but he's a first-line center for a lot of teams in the NHL. And as a result, he can really sink his teeth into a lot of second lines in this league. And so that's kind of my biggest why I like the kind of Pavelski-Thornton together, because they can overmatch or at least match almost anyone in the NHL, and that gives the rest of the Sharks a little bit of breathing room. That being said, as someone who wants Tomas Hertl on the third line, you know, because I feel like that top line would be good enough with almost anyone anyway, it's a little bit like, that they weren't quite as dominant as I would hope they would be. But, you know, whatever. It's one game. And I think for a guy like Thornton especially, it takes a few games for him to kind of heat up and get into game speed and, you know, whatever, all the other cliche crap.
Well, speaking of cliche crap, do you think the World Cup is having any effect, or do you think it's going to have any effect on the players that were out there?
My feeling is that, you know, for a guy like Thornton who played in a bunch of games, it should have a positive effect because you're playing against better players than you're going to play against in the preseason. So it shouldn't. What do you think about Kopitar? I mean, he's a guy like Thornton, playing the same number of games, basically. No, not basically, literally, I think. So, I mean, do you think that that's a concern or a positive or anything?
Well, with Kopitar, and he played in Slovenia's Olympic qualifying, too, before the World Cup. So,
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. And, of course, helped him qualify because he's on to Kopitar. But I think that... Yeah, I don't think it's going to be an effect really in either direction, at least not in October. Like, if Kopitar is not up to game speed, he's only at 90% of his usual effectiveness, I think. And obviously he's still going to keep, most of his effectiveness relies on positioning and strength and, you know, smarts with the puck. And that's not stuff that really is going to go away. I think that it's more a concern with the line mates, and he could have had a full training camp with Devin Setoguchi, and I think there would still be a learning curve there. So I'm not worried about that aspect of things, obviously the the big effect is Gafford getting hurt. But for the other players, I think it's going to be a neutral effect overall.
Yeah, because I think even the – and obviously I know in your situation specifically, the Gabrick thing, that obviously, you know, that sucks. But I think that at the same time we overreact to that kind of situation. You know, Gabrick could have just easily been injured in preseason. I mean, no, that that happens all the time, you know. So I think it's
especially
like –
especially Marion Gabrick.
I mean, the dude is literally like held together with duct tape. Which, and I say that as a pretty big Marion Gabrick fan. I like him a lot. I just wish that he was healthier. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Marion Gabrick also wishes that. I don't know. I don't like the thing where we do that we do where we're like, oh, international tournament is bad because players could get hurt. It's like, well, players can get hurt doing all kinds of stuff. Zach Greinke once got hurt playing pickup basketball. I don't this stuff happens, man. I don't know. They're people. It's whatever. So it is. It sucks. Yeah, it always sucks. So
yeah,
what?
Dolphins offensive lineman got hurt getting out of the shower on Sunday.
Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah, you're right.
Disaster can strike at any time. Oh, that one, you can see the element of danger because all of us, I think, have been injured getting out of the shower at some point.
I have absolutely injured myself in the shower at least once or twice. Yeah, that's a dangerous place.
Right. It's more the guy who... someone tripped over their dog, I think, right? Within the last couple years.
Oh, yes. Oh man, I wish I could remember the name of that guy. That's actually a good trivia question. The dog injury guy. Yeah, exactly. I mean, this stuff happens, and I know it sucks that it's Gabrick, obviously, but
If I search for tripped dog injured on Twitter, will I find the results?
I already did, and I'm looking on a Bleacher Report right now, which I feel bad about.
Von Miller.
Well,
whoa. sorry, there was an autoplay video on there, and I feel pretty embarrassed about that. I know, that's Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Okay, so the first result that I'm seeing is Derek Holland, pitcher for the Texas Rangers.
Oh, man, yeah, the Rangers have been extremely cursed in such ways.
Yeah, tripped. He had surgery on his left knee in January because his dog tripped him, and he was out for 6 months. So there's always something worse. I'd be much more angry if someone got hurt tripping over their dog than if they took a puck to the foot at the World Cup of Hockey.
Right. One time, Jeremy Affeldt, pitcher for the Giants, cut into his hand while he was trying to separate frozen hamburger patties.
Oh,
player, different time, got injured because his, and I'm being 100% serious, his literal toddler tackled him.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've heard of fans getting angry because athletes have kids in the middle of the season, but.
Right. But not
I didn't think
this
it was
way,
because
right?
toddler
Usually
tackling
like
was
infants.
An epidemic.
Right. Toddlers are dangerous, man. I don't know if you've ever been around those little monsters, but. Good Lord.
I've never been tackled.
This is an anti-children show. Well, yeah, that's because you're ginormous. It would have to be a really big toddler.
I go down easily if a toddler tackles my knee, put it that way. But that's more to make the toddler feel good about themselves.
Not like Jamie Benn, then, am I right?
Oh, right? God.
You just, like, softballed it in there. It's almost midnight. What do you want from me? Okay, we should probably end it now. This is only going to get worse.
We've got at least 6 minutes left.
Oh, sweet.
I think we.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, we technically have 36 minutes left until the podcast cuts us off, so there's no hard limit. But I was hoping that at midnight I could either. Well, we'll see how we do. We'll see how we do at midnight.
Yeah, no spoilers. Yeah, Jesus.
Yeah.
Like 6 minutes.
Yeah, I figured there was only so long.
God knows if anyone is right. If anyone's made it this long, they can make it another 6 minutes.
Yeah. I'd once again like to thank our listeners for sticking with us. It's going to be a long season, but maybe hopefully a good season. Yeah.
Right.
And maybe the bad sports injuries becomes a regular segment, and that gives you a reason to tune in through 55 minutes of us rambling.
Oh, that's actually a good idea. We can make that a regular segment. I'm gonna do some workshopping on that.
Okay, great. When do the Kings play the Sharks next?
When do the Kings play the Sharks next? That's actually a good question. You know, I've been so focused on, like, this one game that I really have not looked really at all at the Sharks. Oh, wait, whoa, I have a printout of it in front of me. Oh, my God.
Oh.
Like I planned this. Man, I am the best. Let's see. Wow, not until November 30th in Los Angeles.
Oh, so, okay.
Not for a while.
All right. Well,
but the Sharks now go on a pretty long East Coast road trip. They're on the road for 5 straight games, in starting in Columbus, ending in Detroit. They do the New York back-to-back and play Pittsburgh, thankfully, without Sidney Crosby, I think. So, at least there's that.
Oh, right. Yeah, speaking of injuries that may or may not have been sustained before the season started. Now, the Sharks were a hashtag elite road team last year, right?
Yeah, well, they won a lot of road games anyway. Their possession numbers were actually definitely worse on the road than they were at home. They just got luckier on the road, in my humble opinion. Or, if you prefer, they were road warriors who knew how to stay at the Holiday Inn Express. They knew what kind of continental breakfast to eat, and that's why they won so many road games.
Well, Logan Couture was saying on the post-game interview today with whoever NBC had interviewing him that
Brian
he really likes the
former
idea.
Shark Brian Boucher.
Oh, there you go. Shutout streak record holder, Brian Boucher?
Ooh, I actually think that's right. Oh, yeah.
Nice,
man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Pulled that one out from somewhere. Anyway, he was interviewing Couture after the game, and he was talking about the benefits of that early season road trip, getting a chance to bond with all the guys and staying at Holiday Inn Expresses or something better than that, I would assume. So,
I hope so.
The Kings, did they get a road trip? No, but the Kings usually seem to excel in those East Coast road swings. I know they've swept the New York, New Jersey trip a few times in recent years, so I don't think the road trip is going to phase the Sharks, but we'll see if they actually manage to put up the underlying numbers to support a winning record this time.
Yeah, I mean, I think and if you read my exclusive one-on-one interview with Logan Couture, which went up on the website today, he also said something similar to me. fearthefin.com, www.fearthefin.com. I think that part of the reason that the Kings and Sharks have been good in East Coast road trips is because historically the Eastern Conference has been this is a family show, but dog crap, bad, not good. So
yeah, that was close. We've never had anyone curse on the program before.
Wait, really?
No.
Oh, okay, I was gonna say I feel like I must have at least tonight, even probably, but I honestly couldn't remember. Anyway. So I mean, that's certainly part of it, I would assume. The Kings do that. They've done that, they've done some kind of like a retreat thing before when they go on those East Coast road trips, right? Isn't that a thing that they've done in the past? Something like that, some team building thing?
Yeah, something like that.
We don't need to go into detail that they go and like write fanfic in a cabin in like, you know, Maryland or whatever. It's not that big a deal, but, or whatever they do.
Yeah. I was going to say something about visiting the site and remember the Titans where they run up the hill, but I think they actually might have done that one year.
Wait, really?
Let's see.
That's awesome. Well, I really hope that's true. I asked Logan Couture in the interview if, because the Bills play the 49ers at home on Sunday, Sharks are going to be out there. They don't have a game. And I was like, oh man, are you going to go to the game? And, he like hesitated because I actually think he is going to go. This is pure speculation on my part, but he said, no, oh no, I hadn't thought about it, which is totally bullshit. First of all, because he absolutely has thought about it. Cause I know that he has gone to games before when he's been on road trips. So nice try, Logan. We're going to catch you in the act. Plus he can get field passes from the 49ers. I don't buy it. He's going to be in Buffalo on Sunday. I'm not going to fly out there myself to check, but I believe it.
And if he is in there on Sunday and you find out, where will we be able to read about it?
On www.fearthefin.com or at fearthefin on Twitter. That's twitter.com/fearthefin. All together, no spaces, no underscores.
Great. I'm not going to be selling Fear the Fin to any readers, at least tonight, but I think you've done a fine job of that yourself.
Thank you.
Aww. Yeah.
I'm going to pass that on to our SB Nation overlord so I can get a raise out of this.
Great.
Okay.
I won't speak against you, put it that way.
Aw, thank you. I'm not going to put you on my reference list, I guess. Jesus, tough crowd.
Appreciate that.
Kings Flyers game should actually be pretty fun, right? I mean, is that a game you're looking forward to? I think the Flyers are going to be kind of a fun team this year.
Yeah, they've got, I know, two rookies, Provorov and Konechny. One on defense.
Konechny is the dude.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know that I selected him in the SB Nation mock draft when the Kings had the 13th pick. So I choose to believe in an alternate reality where he's ripping it up for the Kings and inexplicably getting sent down to the AHL and dominating there instead. But alas, we never got to see what the Kings would actually do with that pick. But the Flyers should be fun. They've got, Hextall running the show out there. They've got the young talent. I never really liked playing against Giroux and Voracek, but it'll be, from a neutral standpoint, a fun game. And the Kings have all the 50th anniversary festivities going on that day. They're bringing back their original broadcaster, Jigs McDonald, which if you read www.julesfromthecrown.com today, you know that he'll be actually announcing a game in February at the ripe old age of 78, which is...
Is that the one against the Stars?
That one is against the Panthers, I believe.
Okay. I know there's so many guest broadcasters, which is a really cool thing that the Kings are doing this year, in my opinion. I know one of them is against the Stars, but that's a cool thing.
Yeah, and it's funny because I was saying how impressive it is that Jigs McDonald is going to be broadcasting a game at 78, but he's actually younger than Bob Miller. Bob Miller turned 78 today, which is pretty incredible.
What?
How is Bob Miller
that old?
He's like Vin Scully. Something about broadcasting LA sports for 40 years lets you drink from the fountain of youth.
Wow. We should get into that. Does broadcasting for the Ontario Reign count? Because I think maybe that's a reachable goal for us.
Well, I'm can podcasting about the Ontario Reign qualify? Yeah.
Good call. Right. Okay. Yeah. I'm willing to give it a go just for the heck of it.
All right, cool. We're in it for the long haul. But it's really exciting. I'm pretty stoked about being able to hear Gary Thorne call my team's action because so many of my young ESPN hockey recollections are of him yelling, and it should be fun. As long as the Kings don't go on one of their patented scoring droughts while he's in the booth, we'll get to hear some goal calls.
Right, absolutely. Well, they get to play Philadelphia. Oh, is that coming out this week?
No, he's doing I know Bob Miller, and this is a very it's actually very similar to the arrangement Vin Scully has had where he's doing all the home games and he's doing most of the local at least he's doing some of the interdivision road games. I think Gary Thorne is actually doing part of the East Coast swing, so he'll be because he's based in Baltimore, I imagine, because he does Orioles play-by-play. So he'll be doing East Coast games. I think he actually has a part of the Canada swing, too. But his games are in the months of November and December, it looks like. Yeah.
All right.
He's got a Canada swing and an East Coast swing. And then... the former Dallas play-by-play guy, Ralph Strangis, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, but who did games for 20, 25 years out there, he actually gets to do a game in Dallas, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, that should be really cool. Yeah, that's a cool thing. Yeah. If they're doing an East Coast swing with Gary Thorne, there will be goals scored because, especially if it's including this Detroit game, I mean, good Lord. God willing, if you can't score against Detroit, then you're going to have problems going forward.
Yeah, if the Kings are not scoring goals against Ottawa, Winnipeg, Colorado, Toronto, and Buffalo, then there's a huge problem.
Right. Exactly. The mm-hmm. Gary Thorne not being able to call goals will be the least of the problems.
Yeah, but it was fun today because I guess, well, Gary Thorne's less than a month away, but it was fun. We tweeted out from the official account about how Gary Thorne was going to be in the booth, and there were a ton of responses from people just going, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever, and tagging other people in it. And it's you forget how, you know, omnipresent he was 10 or 15, 20 years ago calling NHL action. So it's cool to see that he's still connecting with people at that, even with that much time removed from when he was actually calling the NHL.
Right. Absolutely. All right. Hey, we made it to midnight. It's 12:06 and,
flew right by
West Coast. No problemo. Right. So now we get overtime, right? Because after midnight, I think that's how this works on our contracts.
Yeah, I'll look into the fine print there. Any final thoughts on?
Well, winning still better than losing. Sharks looks fine. That's nice. Wake me up when the playoffs start.
Yeah, we aren't caring too much about today's loss. I don't know why you would possibly think that.
You'll be fine. You'll be fine. Yeah. When are we going to go to our rain game? We should go soon.
I don't know.
Oh, my God. Oh, come on. Yeah. Don't be like that.
It's late.
All right.
Late. I can't.
All right.
Great, yeah.
Fine. I'll drive out there for a Kings game. Okay.
King Sharks, November 30th. Mark it down.
No, I am not going to that game. Good Lord, I can't afford that. What do I look like? How much do you think they're paying me over here? We're going to go to a nice Kings Coyotes game or something more in my price range.
SB Nation Summit should be good.
Yeah. Ooh, Kings Edmonton. Whoa, November 17th. Hold on. All right, I'm marking that down. So clear your calendar.
Great.
Okay.
Well, we'll see how the Kings are doing at that point. But yes, I believe the Kings will be fine. We'll end on that note.
I also do.
Congratulations to the Sharks on getting out in front of it, though.
Yeah. Well, sure. Whatever. Yeah. I did my best. I forechecked really hard tonight.
All right. Good work. Thanks again for joining.
Thank you.
Thanks again for everyone who made it all the way to the end, or is making it all the way to the end at a more decent hour.
God bless all of you. You really are the real MVPs.
All right, we'll be back soon. Thanks everybody.
Soon.
And good night.
Later.
Soon.